Ja, du kan.
Dag.
Dag.
Er du meget syg?
Ja. Eller, alt er jo relativt, men...
Hvad har du lavet i dag?
I dag, jeg har været en kort tur inde hos lægen, og så har jeg ellers frosset og svedt og frosset, og så er jeg sovet. Og frosset og svedt, så er jeg sovet.
Tror du, det er et eller andet med, at vi går for meget op ad hinanden, at vi sådan ligesom kommer i cyklus?
Altså, det har vi jo været i mange år, et eller andet sted, ikke? Vi kan bare se, at vi fik jo søvnapnø sammen, ikke? Så...
Ja.
Yeah. Det kan gøre, det kan ikke kun ondt, når jeg griner. Det...
lad os lige på at opsummere. Onsdag aften, der er vi skeduleret, at... Nej, ved du hvad? Ved du hvad? Jeg trykker lige på knappen først, og så lad os lige få den.
Velkommen til panikknappen. Her er Dukka og Palle Bo.
Godmorgen, godmiddag, god aften. Vi ved ikke præcis, hvornår du lytter, kun det med sikkerhed er på et tidspunkt i fremtiden.
Og det er vi så glade for, at du gør, og vi håber i den anledning også, at du har det bedre, end vi har det nu. Vi, som i denne sammenhæng, er du kan være Lønge og Palle Bo. Nu gjorde jeg det. Hørte du det?
Ja, jeg hørte det godt.
I samme øjeblik, jeg sagde det, så gik jeg, fuck, det gjorde jeg det. Nå, okay.
Det staves T-U-K-A, og det du kan han mener, det er, at han skulle nævne sit eget navn til sidst. Dels fordi, punkt 1, det er høfligt, og dels fordi, så passer det bedre med, at jeg kan få lov at sige, at det staves T-U-K-A. Whatever. Vi er syge begge to. Og det, jeg vil sige, det er onsdag aften. Lige nu er det torsdag aften. Og onsdag aften havde vi planlagt, at der passede det bedste, at vi skulle optage ugens udsendelse.
Og der var lavet aftaler med nogen, vi skulle snakke med.
Vi fik aflyst de fleste af aftalerne, men en af aftalerne med den her hemmelige gæst, som jeg har haft legnet op i et par uger, ville jeg altså ikke til at aflyse, fordi det gør man ikke.
Jeg glæder mig meget til at høre det, fordi at jeg ved stadigvæk ikke, hvem det er. Det ligger jo i sagens natur, hemmelig gæst, men du har hypet vedkommende for mig i 2-3 uger, og nævnt noget med den mest kendte mand i Europa, den tidspunkt, og verdensstjerne snakket om. Og så sker der jo så det, at hun fandt, at jo, jeg spiser aftensmad, og vil lige sidde sådan en time og kvarter sammen med familien, inden jeg hopper ud i bilen og skal op til dig. Og så på et tidspunkt, så mens jeg sidder der, så hen over 2-3 minutter, så kan jeg bare mærke feberen skylde ind over mig. Og Jakob, den yngste, han kommer over på et tidspunkt og giver mig en krammer og siger, ej, hvor du varm, far. Og så svedte jeg træn. Og så fik jeg det skidt. Og det skete sådan lige lidt af 3-5 minutter der.
Og
så sms'er jeg til dig, at jeg skal vist ikke nogen steder. Og det var du træt af, fordi du...
Det passede ikke herren for Tornum.
det
var jeg faktisk...
Du var dog så lojal, at du skrev, at du var faktisk også ved at få det skidt.
Jeg var nemlig på vej til at få det skidt, men jeg mandede mig op, og så havde jeg en 37 minutter lang samtale med denne herre, som du skal få lov til at gætte lige om et øjeblik.
Okay.
Bagefter gik jeg fuldstændig kold, og så i dag har jeg stort set ligget og... frosset og svedt og frosset og svedt og sovet og sovet og frosset og svedt. Så vi har haft en dag, der har været nogenlunde ens.
Jo.
Men
lige nu der er sådan altså relativt okay, men på den måde, som man er, når man sådan kvarter 20 minutter inden har knaldet par piller af forskellige arter i hovedet på sig selv, og så ved man, at man time halvanden, hvis man stadigvæk er vågen, så hævner de sig, fordi så holder de op med at vække igen.
Er det bare mig, der sidder med en eller anden fornemmelse af, at nogle af vores faste, de få faste lytter, vi har, de begynder at tænke, at nu er vi ved at være lidt ustabile, fordi det her, det er jo heller ikke et sædvanligt show, det efterhånden længe siden, vi har lavet det.
Jeg kan godt forestille mig, at der sidder på stykker og tænker tyse drenge.
Mm-hmm.
Fordi altså... Ja, hvem skal vi snakke om, for eksempel? Kunne man forestille... Yes, måske.
Ja, måske, ja.
At hisse op over, at hvad fanden det for en gang tyngse drengeri, bare fordi man får en smule feber og sådan noget. Jeg vil sige, jeg tror, jeg har en smule opbakning hos Lytter Torben, fordi den der statusmeddelelse, man laver på sin Facebook-profil,
uh-huh.
Der var jeg så inde på et tidspunkt, og så ændrer min statusprofil, så der stod, du er nu officielt en ynkelig syg mand.
Ved du hvad, det... Jeg researcher jo, inden jeg sætter mig her i studiet, hvor jeg kunne lægge mærke til, at du var inde og opdaterer Facebook i morges klokken 6.
Ja, så var jeg også vågen. Jeg havde det ikke godt, men jeg var vågen.
Og du mener, du er så syg, så du ikke kan komme herop, og alligevel så sidder du og skriver en masse på Facebook klokken 6 om morgenen?
Altså, ikke at skrive en masse, jeg opdaterer. Jeg har børn, der skal i skole, der bliver man sgu ikke lige sådan i seng.
Og siger tillykke til dem, der fylder over og så videre.
Ja, ja. Helt sikkert. Men ud at køre, jeg kan godt sige dig, til sidst, så havde jeg det bare, altså det ikke til sidst, da jeg sendte sms'en, så er jeg jo bare ret sikker på, at hvis jeg satte mod i delebilen og kørte til Tottenham, så inden jeg nåede til Tottenham, så ville jeg simpelthen være tvunget til at vende om.
Okay.
Men hvor fanden var jeg på vej hen? Med ynkelig mand, der skrev på ynkelig, jeg skrev status med det. Du kan jo officielt en ynkelig syg mand.
Og på min Facebook-profil, der står der, er mere syg normalt.
Ja. Og kvinder har jo meget travlt med, at vi er ynkelige, når vi er syge.
Det er vi virkelig, virkelig.
Men jeg havde så skrevet, bræh, til sidst. Straks, eller ikke straks, men ret hurtigt, så kom der så en kommentar til min statusmeddelelse netop fra Lytter Torben, som skrev, hvorfor bræh? Det med at være ynkelig, når vi er syge, det er en hårdt tilkæmpet ret, vi mænd har. Nu ved jeg så også, og har kunne følge med i på hans statusmeddelelse, og Torben så også, at han har faktisk også været ret syg flere gange her i den senere tid. Det er der mange, der har. Og på min nye arbejdsplads, GoFM, som snart ikke er så syg mere, der har vores nye morgenvært, Annelise, hun har været syg i 4 uger nærmest, og først begyndte at få det. Altså hun startede faktisk premieren på morgenshowet med at stå der og være skidesyg, og havde været hos lægen dagen inden og få penicillin.
Ja, det kunne man ikke høre på hende.
Nej.
I er kommet godt fra start, er I?
Jeg synes, jeg er glad.
Hvad, når udsendelserne starter på en ny station, så er der altid en tekniker, der ligger under bordet med en loddekolb. Var det også tilfældet?
Der er aldrig noget, der er færdigt.
Nej.
Der er aldrig noget, der er færdigt, når studieværelserne går i gang. Og jeg ved ikke, hvorfor. Det er åbenbart en naturlov. Der er stadigvæk masser af ting, der skal skrues og tweakes og indstilles, ikke mindst på mikrofonlyd og sådan noget. Der mangler noget afdækning i studiet, noget af det runger lidt en gang imellem. Men det er åbenbart sådan, at når en ny radio starter, medmindre man har køset stygt mange og vanvittigt mange millioner af det, som TV2 Radio så gjorde, så er det jo aldrig færdigt, når man starter. Og der vil sige, det var måske så en af de ting, som TV2 Radio, en af de få ting, som TV2 Radio gjorde ordentligt, det var, at studierne var vist nok færdigt, de gik i gang.
Mm-hmm.
Men det ses sgu meget sjældent. Men jo, de kom godt fra start, og jeg synes sgu holde det i orden. Jeg er glad for også vores morgenhold, det har jeg også, og alle andre også sagt. Så nu skal vi bare have pøs i lytterne på, og det skal sgu nok blive godt, tror jeg.
Men lad os lige gemme sådan lidt. Jeg var i Dublin i weekenden, men lad os lige gemme den til næste uge.
Ja.
Der er nu egentlig ikke, fordi der var specielt meget at fortælle. Det er en fed by. Er du klar?
Ikke specielt meget at fortælle. Var det ikke en herretur?
Jo.
Okay.
Det er derfor, der ikke er så meget at fortælle.
Okay.
Okay. Er du klar til at gætte ugens hemmelige gæst? Nu må jeg så være...
Overhovedet ikke. Være
personen og svare ja eller nej.
Mm.
Okay, de 60 sekunder starter nu.
Er du musiker?
Ja.
Er du sanger?
Ja.
Spiller du på et instrument? Eller synger du på en? Spiller du på et instrument?
Ja, det ved jeg ikke.
Har du lavet andet end musik?
Ikke meget bekendt.
Du har ikke spillet i film?
Nej.
Er du over 40?
Ja.
Er du europæer?
Ja.
Er du englænder?
Ja.
Er du pladeaktuel?
Nej. Ja.
Ikke pladeaktuel.
Ja, har du
Jeg har et bud.
Okay, vil du have lidt flere bonusinformationer?
Prøv bare at give mig en, så kan jeg prøve at se, om jeg vil gætte den.
Altså, du har allerede skudt dig ind på, at han er englænder. Han bor i England med en dansk kæreste. Han har solgt 40 millioner, omkring 40 millioner plader på verdensplan. Det siges, at han har... Det siges, at han har en af de mest easily recognizable voices, altså mest let genkendelige stemmer i verden. Han er nomineret til Best Act Ever Award ved MTV Europe Music Award, som bliver holdt i Liverpool i begyndelsen af november. Hans...
Tom Jones?
Nej, hans... Hans debut som soloartist blev den bedst sælgende single i 1987 i England. I marts 88 gik den samme sang nummer 1 i USA.
Vent.
Skal du have den der begynder, hvor det begynder at blive nemt nu? Det første sekund af hans første single lyder sådan her.
Det var en Stock Aitken & Waterman indledning. Du var enig om det er Stock Aitken & Waterman der har produceret det der.
Ja.
For helvede. Ja. Yeah.
Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down.
Ja, og så slog han sig lidt på noget mere jazzet, da han blev træt af det poppet. Men ja, det gjorde han sgu meget pænt. Det var ikke sådan sindsoprivende fed jazz, men det var meget pænt, fordi han har en god stemme.
Sig navnet, Duka.
Jeg kan jo se ham. Jeg kan se den der 80'er pop frisyr for helvede.
Ja, hvordan ser den ud?
Ja, men den står lige op i sådan noget hår, jeg har haft en gang for mange år siden.
Det har jeg også. På nogenlunde samme tid. Kender du begrebet, der hedder en Rickroll?
Rick Astley for helvede.
Ja, nemlig. Rigtigt.
Hvor længe har du kogt på den?
Ja, men det har jeg kogt på et stykke tid.
Hvem kender du, Skrøsberg, vi som skaffede aftalen med ham?
Hans kone. Eller hans kæreste, Lena Bavnsager, som er tidligere pladeselskabskvinde, og løb på ham den vej igennem. Og så har hun i dag sit eget filmselskab, eller hun er filmproducer og har sit eget selskab, der hedder Ugly Duckling Films, hvor hun blandt andet har lavet Happy Days og mange andre film, men også netop har præsenteret en film, hvor James Bond, hvad han hedder?
Den nye?
Ja, den nye James Bond.
Craig
David. Og kom nu.
Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig, ja, han spiller hovedrollen, og meget succesfuld, og hun er jo, har boet sammen med Rick Astley, og de har en datter sammen på 16 år.
Jeg kan, altså nu du siger navnet, kan jeg godt huske det også, det med Ugly Duckling der, men jeg har ikke aldrig rigtig fået den kædet sammen.
Men du, ved du, hvad en Rickroll det er?
En Rickroll?
Ja, nej, en Rickroll.
Rick?
At man er blevet Rickrolled.
Nej.
Det er noget, der... Jeg fandt også først ud af det den anden dag. Det er noget, der har floreret på YouTube i lang tid. Okay. Hvor der er... Det er et kultfænomen. Når man søger et eller andet obskur, typisk et eller andet med nogle let påklædte kvinder. For eksempel, hvis man søger på sætningen... Paris Hilton blows Buster Rhymes a stick. Eller noget i den stil. Så når man trykker på den, og tror, nu får man lov til at se det, så i stedet for, så toner der en ung fyr frem på 22, eller på omkring 21 år, og med den her sang. Og, okay. Og det sker med rigtig, rigtig mange ting, og så et skilt, hvor der står, You got Rickrolled. Og det er det er blevet et kult fænomen, som har gjort, at at den her musikvideo, den er blevet set, jeg tror en opgørelse viste 15 millioner gange.
Men det vil sige, der sidder nogle webnørder et eller andet sted, og det må de jo gøre, og udtænker sindssyge måder, søgninger folk kunne finde på at lave, og siger, det får vi til at pege ned på en Rick Astley video.
Ja. Alt muligt forskelligt. Alt muligt forskelligt, hvor man tror, nu får man lov at se et eller andet let på klædt, og så kommer ja. Rick Astley. og det er også det, som måske der er nogen, der siger, jamen det er derfor, at han er blevet nomineret til den her MTV Award. Ja, fordi...
Det kommer lidt bag på mig, vil jeg sige.
Det kommer også bag på ham, og han tror selv, det er en joke, men det kan du høre lige om lidt.
Okay. Hvis jeg lige må have lov at sidestep et øjeblik. Der var lige en ting, jeg lige kom i tanke om, og grunden til, at jeg lige går ud af sit andet spor, det er, at jeg lige nu, mens vi snakker sammen, der kører udenlyd på fjernsyn TV2 i Østjylland, ikke?
Mm-hmm.
Og der var der et eller andet billede med kronprinsen og sådan noget. Når vi er færdige, hvis du overgår det overhovedet, så prøv at gå ind på Ekstrabladet på eb.dk, ikke?
Mm-hmm.
Og så skal du finde, på nat, det var Jan, der gik i seng, så skal du finde en artikel om folketingsåbningen, hvor Margrethe, hun sidder og falder i søvn. Der er et, undskyld ordspillet, et kongebillede. Man ser de kongelige gæster til folketingsåbningen, sådan forfra. På bagerste række, sådan lidt op over dem foran, der sidder, hvad er det, Benedikte, så sidder Marie Cavalier, eller hvad så hun nu? Nu har hun vel prinsesse Marie, ikke?
Mm-hmm.
Og så sidder Joachim nederst til højre på bagerste række. Foran, der sidder så til venstre, fra venstre mod højre, der sidder Frede, så sidder Maggie, og så sidder Henrik.
Mm-hmm.
Margrethe, hun er faldet i søvn.
Hun har søvnopnødt, den stakkels pus.
Margrethe, hun er fået lidt søvn. Det geniale i billedet her er, at Frederik sidder og kigger på hende og griner smørret. Og i en lille skråt op til højre kan man se, op bagved sidder Joachim og kigger ned på Frederik og smiler ekstremt smørret. Det er så sjovt et billede. Man tror, du skulle ind og finde det. Altså, et billede af Margrethe, der sover. Frederik sidder og kigger på hende og griner altså helt tydeligt med stort, åbenmundet grin. Og Joachim sidder op bagved og kigger ned på Frederik og griner smørret.
Er det ikke noget, nu når du er lige ved at lægge sidste hånd på brevet til Margrethe, er det ikke noget, du kan få føjet ind, flettet ind, at vi lover, at det her det bliver mere spændende end Folketingets åbningsdebat?
Jo, det var sgu da. Det var en good point.
Det tager du lige et notat om, og så det er næste uge, vi får lov at høre brevet, ikke inden, og lige kan læse korrektur på det, inden det bliver sendt afsted, fordi det skal være i orden jo, ja.
Ja. Men du skal ikke sidde på efterårsferie næste uge, kan jeg fejle noget.
Det er jeg ikke planer om, nej.
Nej. Og det er jo så den opmærksomhed, at vi så anvender lige nu her, der er vi tæt på efterårsferien år 2000 år.
Det. Har du lyst til at høre min snak med Rick Astley?
Jeg vil meget gerne høre
okay.
Din snak med Rick Astley.
Kan du sove godt bagefter?
Ja, lige måde, og god bedring.
Tak.
Panikknappen. Det store radioprogram, der ikke er i radioen.
Rick Astley, it's an honor to have you on the phone.
It's my honor to be here. Thank you.
First of all, Rick, all this internet craze about the Rick Roll, we have to talk about that because
sure.
it's let's just explain a little bit about it. It's when you get a link from a friend or you find something on the internet saying like
you're going to see a girl in underwear, basically. Yeah. This is what it all comes down to. That guys send other guys links saying, hey, look at this sexy girl in her underwear or whatever, and obviously they think they're going to see some hot babe on a beach taking her clothes off or what have you, and what they end up with is seeing a video of Never Gonna Give You Up. So it's a bit of a disappointment for a lot of people, but I think some guy in America started it, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and it just grew and grew and grew until it became crazy. And then this year YouTube decided to kind of Rickroll everybody on April Fool's Day, so every link that you went on their major front page was a video of me, basically. So I'm sure that didn't go down too well with everyone, but, you know, it was a bit of fun.
So this is really a cult phenomenon where you, instead of seeing Paris Hilton in her underwear, you get to see
a young red-haired
guy.
Exactly. 21-year-old me. I mean, come on, who would prefer to see Paris Hilton in her underwear or me singing Never Gonna Give You Up? Come on, there's no contest, man.
No contest.
No.
I read in The Sun that they say around 15 million people have been tricked into clicking on it.
Yeah, something crazy like that. I'm not sure what it is, to be honest, but it's, yeah. I mean, listen, the thing is, it's not really anything to do with me, obviously, but it is something to do with me because it's the video, but it's nothing to do, you know, I didn't set it up, I didn't try to do it, it's just a bit of one of those crazy things, you know, but whatever, it's I'll roll with it, you know, literally. So.
Yeah. Has it meant anything to your career? Because I know that you do the odd concert once in a while.
Yeah, I do. I don't do many. I still, the thing is, for a long, long time, I didn't want to sing all my old songs. I didn't want to go out and tour or do anything like that. And I had some nice offers over the years to do things, but I just didn't want to, really. And then a couple of years ago, I had an offer to go to Japan, and my family really, really wanted to go as well. So I went, I worked for 3 days, I did the concerts, and then we had a week's holiday. And to be honest, I thought I was going to kind of just put up with doing the concerts just because we were going to get a nice time in Japan out of it and some money, obviously. But it ended up that I kind of really enjoyed it. And I think because I'm a bit older now, well, a lot older.
Well, we're about the same age, really.
Okay, well, all right, well, we're still young then. Yeah. If I'm your age, we're young. I didn't expect to enjoy it, is what I'm saying. I kind of did it in the thing that, well, I'll get some money out of it and we'll have a trip out of it and it'll be okay. But I think also because it was Japan, it's like being on the moon there sometimes, you know, it's so different. I kind of just enjoyed it and it just then opened the doors for me a little bit to do some things. And I did a little tour here in the UK with some other 80s acts this year, and I kind of enjoyed that as well. And then I've done a couple of gigs on my own in the Far East. I went to Manila and Singapore a couple of months ago, and I really enjoyed it. You know, I think because to me it's like a weekend job. It's not something I do every day. I can just treat it with a bit of fun and enjoy it.
Yeah. Do you think it's something you have to get your distance away from it? It's like like it took years for Paul McCartney to sing the old Beatles stuff.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, obviously, that's probably the biggest example you can think of. And I mean, obviously, it's slightly different for someone like him because he is like a living icon. And with me, I think it's just that thing. I just had enough of it. I was just. I mean, to be honest, some people are really great at being pop stars, and it comes natural to them. Some people like to sing, become a pop star, and they go, what the hell is this? And I am definitely one of the second group. And I'm really grateful for it. And, you know, it's given me a nice life. There's no doubt about that. And I really enjoyed my time. But I just had enough of it quite early on, really. And I also think in pop music, and obviously the music I did was very pop and, you know, very kind of radio chart sort of based and what have you. You don't get much of a life doing that anyway, unless you're Madonna and maybe a handful of other people. You don't get very long anyway. So I think I just didn't want to, you know what I mean? I didn't want to. It's hard enough when you're having number one records and what have you. Mm-hmm. When you start being in the top 10, you think, and then when you start not being, you think, this is, you know, when you've really got to fight for a chart position and all the rest of it, it's just not the same thing, I think. But, you know, I was really young when I made those records, and I was just having a laugh, really. And
you made the records with Stock Aitken Waterman, of course, who ruled the charts in the late 80s.
Yeah. I mean,
they were on everything.
Yeah, it was perfect timing, really, in terms of having a pop hit, you know, because they were pretty much the biggest producers at the time, really. I mean, when I signed to them, they were kind of up and coming, and they'd had a couple of records, but they weren't. In the time that I signed when I was 19 and that my first record came out when I was 21, and in that kind of 18 months, they just became the biggest producers, you know. And then obviously after me came people like Kylie Minogue as well, which obviously she's doing, you know, doing well and going strong still. I mean, to me, that's a classic example. I think she seems to be really comfortable with being famous and being a pop star and, you know, all the rest of it. And I'm not really, do you know what I mean? I think she's great at doing what she does, and she manages to kind of inject something new into it sometimes as well, a bit like Madonna does. And with me, it was a bit like, you know what, as you said, I'm this redhead guy who gets up and sings, and that's about it, really. I can't really change, you know what I mean? And you become a bit of a dinosaur if you can't change.
Yeah,
so.
And Rick, what was it like being struck by this kind of massive fame in such a young age, 21 years old? How did you handle it?
Well, it was really good. It got me a Danish babe of a partner, for one thing, so that was good. No, I mean, obviously...
Let's just explain that you are living in sin with Lena.
A beautiful Danish woman.
Yes.
So I'm very, you know, I'm pretty close to Denmark, to be honest. It's kind of, I count myself as being like 25% Danish some days because...
Well, then why not do the interview in Danish?
Yeah, telling you the smaller down, that's about it. So,
yeah, okay.
So I do, you know, I understand a little bit of Danish, and I do, you know, in a dinner conversation, I can follow it up until we've had the second glass of wine, and then it's all gone then. I have no idea what anyone's talking about, you know. But my daughter, or our daughter rather, Amelia, she's pretty good. She speaks Danish really well. But, I mean, obviously she started when she was, you know, from being a baby upwards, so...
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not the easiest language to learn because whenever I'm in Denmark, nobody wants to speak Danish to me. They're all happy to speak English and, you know, and I did actually go to lessons. I went to a school on school, post-school, I should say, and I had lessons for a couple of weeks. And I'd come out of the lessons and I'd go into my favorite cafe, which is Cafe Europa on school. And I'd go in there and I'd order a sandwich and order a coffee in perfect Danish. And the person behind the counter would just speak back in perfect English and say, no problem, I'll bring it right over. So, you know.
Do you still get recognized when you go to Australia?
No, not really. I mean, I don't get recognized anywhere, to be honest. I mean, I do occasionally, obviously, but not where it's a problem or it's any kind of, you know, it's just doesn't happen, really. I've noticed, to be honest, it depends on what my hair is like. If I've got a quiff, if the front of my hair sticks up, then more people recognize me. That is a fact. So, but, and also, I wear glasses now as well. So
yeah, but when you went out of the spotlight in for 10 years in 93, I think, you had long hair back then.
Yeah, but that was just me being daft, really. I mean, I think I had long hair when I was about 14, 15. And I think, again, that was me just being... I was so sick of everything... that I'd done up to that point. And that's unfair. I wasn't sick of it, of everything I'd done, but I was just... It's really boring, to be honest, to listen to pop stars sometimes, and I'm not a pop star anymore, so I can say that, but it's really boring because they'll say, oh, it's so hard to do this, and it's so hard to do that. It isn't. None of it's hard, really. It's just that it's very repetitive. And I used to always think of myself as a footballer who played for Manchester United, but I never got a game. I was always sat on the bench because I didn't really do a lot of singing. And that's what I used to like doing. I used to like getting in a room. I still got a studio at home, and I just go in there and I, you know, play my drums or play whatever I want and just make music and do whatever I do because I like doing it. And when I was a pop star, most of my time was spent doing what I'm doing with you right now, which is talking about me.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, after 4 or 5 years of talking about me, it gets really, really boring. Do you know what I mean? So,
I hope you're not really too bored right now.
No, because I don't do it very often.
Okay.
So I'm right on the edge of boredom right now.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Know, but I'm okay. but it's true though. You know, you speak to a lot of guys who you meet all the time coming into the station and stuff, and they've got that attitude of yeah, whatever. We're a bit, you know, and they turn it on when the radio and the mic goes on and everything. But they're a bit kind of like don't want to be there because. You know, they just came from Paris or they come from wherever. And I think it's more to do with the fact that, generally speaking, they're getting asked the same questions a lot and they're talking about themselves. And young people don't want to do that. They want to go out and explore the world, do stuff and get drunk in bars and do whatever. Do you know what I'm saying? They don't want to be in radio stations talking to people about, you know, themselves. And
to some point, maybe.
Well, I don't know. That was my thing anyway. I, you know, the amount of times that I went to Paris and never saw any of it and... this, that, and the other, you know, and I kept thinking, I'm going out to dinner with the managing director of BMG or whoever it was and all the rest of it. I don't want to be doing that. I want to be out with the girls on reception.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And that I think was, I don't know.
You want to go out with the girls from the record company?
Exactly. Well,
that's what you did. Yeah.
but exactly. That's how I met Lena. She used to work at the record label.
Yeah, I remember when she came to the radio station I was at back in the 80s. So that was quite a story. But it sounds to me a little bit like if you could turn back time and be 20 years again, you'd make some different choices.
Well, you know what? I don't believe in that, to be honest, because I think if you make different choices, you end up with a different life. And I like the life I've got, to be honest, and I count myself really, really lucky. I really do. I genuinely mean that. I think about that every day, to be honest, because I've got a very nice life, and you know, I still get to sing occasionally, but I can have fun with it because, like I say, it's not a job. It's not something I do week in, week out. I do it, you know, occasionally, and that way, it's still fresh to me, and I enjoy doing it. And so, I don't really see the thing about going back and, you know, changing things. I mean, the only thing that I would say is that I used to be in bands when I was a kid and at school and stuff, and I think when I was on my own, I missed that a bit. Because, like I say, if there's four or five of you, you're probably a bit more adventurous and probably a bit more fun about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you're on your own, you behave a bit more. But, well, maybe Robbie Williams doesn't, but do you know what I mean? I mean, most people, when they're on their own, it's just harder. When you're in a band, it's like a little gang, do you know what I mean? And you take anybody on, you know, so.
To me, you always seemed like the good, clean kid. Did we see the real Rick, or did you get into all this drugs thing, or drunk?
No, I've never got into
any
of that.
But how could you stay
really?
Away from it? Because people like Britney Spears and every other pop star, they say, well, you can't help it.
Well, I think you can help it, really. And I think also I had some very... I mean, the guy who looked after me all those years and still manages me now, you know, and looks after me now kind of thing. I mean, I look after him, to be honest, because he's a lot older than me now. But he doesn't drink at all. And in a way, that was really boring, but in a way, it was really good. Because obviously, I did drink, and I still do. But I mean, and I'd go out and, you know, sometimes with the band or whatever. But I just think that if you're doing that all the time... even in its own way, that gets a bit boring. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I've just been really lucky that I've just never been around a group of friends or what have you that have been into drugs, really. So.
Mm. And this is not a Tour de France bike rider saying I've never used APO?
No, it's absolutely not. Listen, I tell you, I mean, I totally understand why certain people get into it. But to be honest, I think they would have got into it if they were a pop star or not. I think that's in their kind of makeup. And it's just that, you know, being in music and what have you, sometimes financially makes it more accessible. But I think drugs are accessible to all different brackets of income today, to be honest. I mean, you see people who can't afford it doing drugs, do you know what I mean?
It's
up to city guys doing drugs just to be able to go back and lose another million tomorrow, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's...
And as a father, Rick, I've got a daughter on that's 14 years old, about to turn 15, and to me that's scary as hell.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it is, but I also think that the generation today, I think, are more aware of drugs than we were. I mean, when I was 15 and 16, my daughter's 16. I didn't really know what drugs were, to be honest. I knew some of the names, but I didn't know what drugs were, if I'm really honest. I'm from a tiny little town and stuff, and you know, drugs were available, but it wasn't.
No.
It wasn't what it is today, and I think our kids have grown up in it, even past the 90s, where I still think it was still such an explosion because of dance music. You know, people used to go to raves and what have you, and you needed to be on drugs just to listen to the music, I think. You know what I mean? So, and I think that culture is, it's obviously drugs are a massive thing still, but I'm saying that I think they're just a lot more aware about of them, and I think they're more possibly able to make decisions that maybe in the 90s that people couldn't make that decision because it was just you either were on drugs and going to these things or you weren't going to them full stop, you know. And I think people now do go to clubs and aren't on drugs, do you know what I mean?
Mm,
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
There's something I've been wanting to ask you for 20 years.
Can I give you that £20 back?
Remember that day? And
that night in Daddy's Disco 20 years ago.
Yeah. All this stuff about you being the coffee boy for Stock at Kuno Waterman, was that a marketing story or was that
was
a true
really.
Story?
I mean, it was probably 50-50 because, like I said before, I was 19 when I signed my record deal and they had some records that they already had to make with different artists. So, and I lived in a small town like 200 miles outside of London. So they asked me, did I want to come and live in London for a while?
Yeah.
And I did. And I used to, I used to make tea for everyone, you know, Bananarama, Dead or Alive, lots of people like that. But I was signed to make records, but I made the tea and I did what in those days was called a tape op, which is like a general assistant to the engineer, if you like.
Yeah.
And I did a bit of that as well. But I kind of got the good side of that because when the studios, when they had downtime at night and at the weekends, I used to be able to get to go into the studios and with like a really good engineer and stuff, a guy who might have been, I don't know, mixing someone's record last week, might be helping me do a demo or something. And so I learned a lot, I think, through that. And I also learned a lot because I used to go to the pub with Stock Aitken Waterman and none of the other guys... The high engineers were allowed to go, the guys high up the tree kind of thing, but the juniors weren't allowed to go to the pub with them.
No.
But I was. And I was like 19, 20, sitting in a pub with the three biggest producers in Europe at the time.
In the world,
to,
really?
Well, possibly, yeah. And listening to what they were going to do next and how they'd just made the record they'd been working on that week. and all of that kind of stuff.
Do you still see them? Do you still talk to them?
I see Pete a bit, yeah. Not Pete Waterman. I wouldn't say often, but I see him a little bit. I've seen him, I think, twice this year.
What do you think of them now? Did you get into a fight when you left them?
No, not
that,
really.
Was that just the times?
What happened was, because I kind of wrote songs before I met them. I mean, they weren't very good songs, but I wrote songs. And when I actually signed to them, Pete then wanted to sign me to a major label. So he signed me to RCA Records, as it was then, one of the really big majors then at that mm-hmm. time. The guy who signed me because he heard me singing some of my songs on a demo tape, and he liked the songs. So then Pete decided, right, Rick can write songs as well, because he thought that would help me get the record deal to this major company. And because they were still a tiny company in reality, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In terms of the big boys, and he wanted me to have a proper huge American company behind me to get me released in America as well. And he's not daft, because it works, because I had a couple of number ones there and stuff. So he's not a stupid guy. He knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But what that led to was that I actually got to write some of the songs. And then when I actually wrote a couple that Pete really loved, he said, right, I want to put one of these out as a single. And then that kind of created a bit of a problem, because they didn't really work with people who wrote their own songs. They kind of wrote the song. And I totally agreed with that. I understood that, you know. And it kind of created a bit of a problem. And it just never really got any better. And also, to be honest, let's face it, all their records sort of sound the same, really. They had a production style,
yeah.
And whoever it was they worked with, you could kind of tell it was a Stock Aitken Waterman record. Some of them sound exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And some of them, you know, like Dead or Alive, don't really sound like Kylie records, but
no,
you can still, you can hear something in them.
Yeah, and then
but
Princess came with Say I'm Your Number One. That
yeah,
was a little bit different as well.
Princess, yeah, for sure. But I mean, if you listen to things, some of the Jason Donovan and Kylie records,
oh, yeah.
And maybe even one or two of mine as well, they're all, you can kind of think, they were all made in the same mold, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I just got a bit bored of that, you know, because I was still a young guy, and okay, I was lucky enough to have quite a bit of success around the world, but I was about 22, 23,
mm-hmm.
And all I wanted to do was go in a studio with amazing musicians and all the rest of it, and you know, get dirty making a record,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I'd never really been able to do that, because that's not the way they worked, and I totally respected and understood that, and
mm-hmm.
I understood that was my
break. So it was a natural move for you to do your own stuff.
And you know what? And I did say this to my manager at the time, and I said it to a couple of people at the record company. I said, look, I don't think I'm going to sell as many records. I really don't, because what they do is a bit like, I don't know, what different producers throughout the years have done, where it's a certain sound. It's a bit like Kanye West. If Kanye West makes a record, either for himself or with someone else, it's going to be a hit, because right now he's got what it takes to do that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people like what he does, and it's his whole, fair enough, he's a bit different because he's an artist as well, but when you look at certain producers, that's what they do, and they give that artist the sound, and it's the sound of the moment, and it works, you know. There was a guy called Rodney Jerkins, let's say, I don't know, 8 years ago, what have you, and he was doing so many R&B records, you know, he had like five rooms all the time banging away, making, you know, and he'd just run into each room. A bit like, what's his name at the moment? It's just Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, Timberland.
Yeah, and all that, you know. And he's got the sound of the moment, and they had the sound of the mid to late 80s. And I kind of knew that jumping out of that was was not necessarily the best financial move. But to be honest, I don't think I could have made another record with them, really, because I just don't think I could have gone out and promoted it, you know what I mean? So,
Then you did Body and Soul in 93, and
yeah.
That was quite a hit, not as big as the first one.
No,
but
I mean, I did
fairly well.
Records with
yeah.
A couple of records after working with them, and you know, and I think I had a top 10 in America again, and,
yeah.
And you know, different places with a song called Cry for Help and stuff like that, but I just kind of knew, to be honest, that you know, and this is the time when I grew my hair as well. And kind of, to be honest, I had made quite a bit of money, there's no doubt, you know, and I'd got myself in a really comfortable position, a position that I kind of felt, it doesn't really matter if I sell any records.
Mm.
I want to do something that I want to do. And, you know, that's, like I say, it's not necessarily the best financial move in life.
By the way, any of that money left?
Yeah, well, that's, to be honest, that's why I don't have to go out and do gigs every weekend. And don't get me wrong, I like getting paid for the gigs. Don't ever doubt that, I do. And I say that in every interview if I can, because it really bores me when people say, oh, no, I do it for the love of music. Yeah, you do it for the love of music, and because they're going to pick you up in a limo and give you a fortune when you come off stage for doing it. You know, that's, it's a bit like footballers, you know. they might say, oh, no, I play for the love of football. Okay, well, why don't you go and play for the team that you were, you know, the town that you were born in then? You know what I mean? They don't want to go and play for Man United or AC Milan or, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, and I'm not knocking them. I mean, who doesn't? You know, that's the one thing in life that is not necessarily fair, but it's just the way life is that people judge things with success. A lot of the time they judge it with the money that that success has brought, i.e. if you get make a lot of money out of it, then it's a success. If you don't make money out of it, it's not a success. I'm not saying that's true of everything, because it's obviously not true of everything, but I'm just saying the modern culture that we live in, that's kind of the way it's viewed, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, no, I've still got a few kroner in the bank, if that's what you're asking. Yeah, I'm doing okay, yeah.
But then,
has anybody got any kroner in the bank? That's what I want to know, the way the banks are going.
Well,
right,
get them out of there now!
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, my God, yeah.
In 93, after the Body and Soul album, that's about, if my math is correct, about the time your daughter was born.
Yeah, she was in 92, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. You took a 10-year maternity leave?
Yeah, I'd say a bit more than that, but yeah, I think, in truth, I like I've just been kind of boring you with. I've kind of had enough of it all, really. I still loved music, and you know.
But what the hell did you do for all that time?
Well, I've enjoyed myself.
Sitting on the couch with the remote control, or
I've done a bit of that. Yeah, I've watched Gladiator a lot of times and various other films. Like I've done various things. I built a little studio in the centre of London, and I used to go there every day and just, you know, do a lot of the things that I'd always wanted to do, which is just spend my time making music. I've done a few. Lena's, as you may know, is a film producer, mm-hmm. and I've done some small and some bigger projects for her. I've done some short films, and I did the music for a movie. Actually, it was a Danish movie called Oh Happy Day. And
oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I've done, you know, a couple of things like that, and I've done a lot of things with certain friends who. Some of which now have gone on to be, you know, successful songwriters mm-hmm. and producers. I'm not taking any credit for it. I'm just saying that, you know, they would come to my studio and, you know, hang out, and I'd let them use the studio when they needed to and stuff like that. And I've done demos for different friends and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've had a dabble with doing records again. I made a record, funnily enough, I made a record about 3 years ago, but it was like old cover songs.
Yeah, Portrait.
But to be honest, what a mess that was. It's unbelievable. The music business stinks, I'll tell you. It really does.
Really?
No, it's the music business is great, by the way, but it also stinks at the same time. Because I went out to do some small concerts of just singing old, really old tunes that my dad used to sing around the house, basically, and have always stuck with me. Things like Frank Sinatra, which, you know, Robbie Williams has obviously done, as different people have as well in modern times. But I was just doing tiny little concerts, like you know, the size of like 200 people, sometimes going up to 600-700, whatever. But I mean, doing small theatres or even little clubs with a nice little tight little jazz band, and I really, really loved doing it. I didn't make any money doing it. In fact, it cost me money to do it because the venues were so small. But I really, really loved it, and it brought back a thing about actually going out and performing and singing. And anyway, the label that I used to be with came to one of the gigs, and they said, "That was great. Why don't you make a record like that?" And I don't know. It just snowballed into doing it. And then, in truth and reality, we didn't really go and do that. What we should have done was just recorded a live one and said, "Well, that's your record." Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I went to America to do it, and I really enjoyed the process of doing the record, but it wasn't... It's a little bit like when you've got a ship, and no one's steering the ship. That was what it was a little bit like, to be honest. And anybody who's ever made a record like that knows exactly what I'm talking about. So any producers or artists or even record company people who are listening, they know exactly what I'm talking about. Sometimes... And that just goes to show that with the record business, you have to be... You've got to be exactly in the right spot at the exact right time, because there's so many people making a great record... You know, you've got to compete with that, and it's so if your record isn't absolutely fantastic, you're screwed, basically, you know. So
yeah, but Rick, you need to sing, dude.
Well, thank you. And you know what, I went to see Stevie Wonder the other night, and it's really odd, because there's not many times that I really believe let me phrase this correctly. There aren't that many times when I really believe that Americans are being sincere, right? And that's just because of the whole culture of the whole, you know, the fakeness of Hollywood and the whole thing, and the politicians as well, to be honest. You know, they come on and it's like, it's all slick and it's all, I really mean this, folks, you know what I mean?
I love you, man.
Yeah, you know. Anyway, I went to see Stevie Wonder, and he sort of played most of the gig, and he was towards the end of the concert, and he said, "I want to talk to you about the, one of the saddest days in, you know, in my life." He said, 2 years ago, my mum died, and he said it was an awful day for me, probably the worst of my life. And he said, but she has come to me in my dreams since then. And he said, she said to me one night, she said, "Son, you just need to go out and play. You need to go out and sing." And I genuinely believe him. Do you know what I mean? I don't think he's the kind of guy who would make that up. Do you know what I mean? And it just made me think, my God, this is like a living legend. You know, you're talking about Paul McCartney. This is a living legend who's just sung for us 20 or more all-time absolute classics. And he's telling us that his mum comes to him in a dream and says, because he's not been out and toured for years, has he?
No.
And I mean, that is a real shame, because that guy is just he's one of the top 10 all-time greats, I think. He's just phenomenal.
Wouldn't it be out of this world to make a duet with him?
I'd be terrified. You know what? Talking about making tea for people, I'd make his tea for him, but I wouldn't do a duet with him. No, come on, he's like, you know, I mean, he's phenomenal. I mean, I think somebody said he's 61 now, and he's still singing.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Paul McCartney live?
Yeah, a couple of times.
I saw him in Horsens, and I remember when he was standing alone on stage with a guitar singing Blackbird.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, well, he's only there's about 20,000 people there, and this guy doesn't need the money.
Oh no!
So I just felt so grateful.
Yeah.
And thought, thank you for doing this for us.
Yeah, well, you know what? And listen, we've just been talking about two living legends there, and I'm not in any way comparing myself to that, but I can at least compare some of my little story to that, in the sense that, you know, I had my hits years and years and years ago, and there was a time when I was sick to death of Never Gonna Give You Up. But now, if I see someone after the gig, or I'm singing the song at a gig, and I can see the people singing along and all the rest of it, I get it now. I can remove myself from being me, and I just get the fact that we're all there just remembering when we were 21 or whatever age people were. Do you know what I mean? I get it. I totally get that. And I never did. As when I was performing those songs, it never dawned on me that Never Gonna Give You Up or whatever song I sang might become someone's song that they played at their wedding because it was when they met, you know what I mean, or whatever. And I totally get that now. And in a, you know, obviously in a small way compared to the guys you've just spoken about, I've still got that. You know, I've got my 15 minutes of fame, if you like, or whatever it is.
A little bit more than that.
Okay, and I can take it, but I can release that bottle every now and again, and I can really drink from that bottle and really enjoy it, and so can everyone else that night. You know what I mean? So,
before we end, there's two things that are major things coming up in the next month or so. You're nominated for the Best Act Ever Award at the MTV Europe Music Awards in Liverpool in the beginning of November.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that is what we in the UK would call a wind-up. I think someone is pulling somebody's leg there because, put it this way, I won't be going to the MTV Awards.
Really?
No, come on, man. That's a joke. That is just someone is playing around there, believe me.
The other nominees are Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, Green Day, Tokyo Hotel, and U2, and it's been nominated by the viewers. The MTV boss, I think he said, MTV has well and truly been rickrolled, so it's this what we started about talking about. Maybe this internet craze has drawn the attention to you and say, well, let's nominate that guy.
Yeah.
But you think it's a prank?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is, yeah.
I heard a rumor that MTV was talking about pulling the award.
Because I think they've realized that somewhere along the line this goes back to the rickrolling thing, I think. You know, the thing about playing a trick on someone by, you know, they get a link and it turns out to be my video. I think it's just an extension of that, to be honest.
So you wouldn't like to be in the room when suddenly the spotlight came on you and said, "Hey, Rick, you've been rickrolled."
Yeah, well, you
right
know what?
Back
I
at
just,
you.
Put it this way, I just won't be going there. Let's put it that way.
But was it? What if it isn't? What if it isn't a joke?
Oh, come on, be real, man. I mean, you can't. I'm not putting myself down. Britney Spears, whatever. You know, I mean, I'm knocking the woman, but she's not the best artist ever either. Do you know what I mean? Christina Aguilera, I think she's got an amazing voice, but give it a rest. She's been around for 10 years. If we're talking about ever, okay, you can slip U2 in there. I respect that. I think that's a fair, you know. Tokyo Hotel, I don't even know who they are. I mean, fair enough, I'm
Me
an
neither.
Old dude, so I shouldn't know who they are. Yeah. If I knew who they were, that would be sad. But, I mean, it's like, you know, you can't have that as a category and then have me win it. It doesn't work, you know what I mean? So.
Well, I agree, you need Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney at least to be nominated.
Yeah, Listen, if they won a category that says vote for the most bizarre person to possibly win it, yeah, I'm straight in there.
I went to their website right this afternoon, and right. I voted for you.
Fantastic. But you've fallen for it now as well.
No, Rick. This one is absolutely not a joke. Next month, you're right here in Denmark.
Sure.
On November 15th and 17th, you're playing at two special Rick Astley-only concerts.
Yep.
Not with some other acts from the 80s, but you're going to Næstved and to Esbjerg and doing these two concerts.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I don't do concerts very often, and it's going to be a little unusual because Denmark is sort of a second home to some degree, do you know what I mean? And the places that I've played mostly, like I've been in the Far East, you know, in Japan and as I say, Singapore and Manila and stuff, I've done some gigs in the UK. So Denmark's going to be kind of, because I'm going to know quite a few people in the audience, certainly in Nashville anyway, so that's going to be funny. But no, I'm looking forward to it. It's good. And, you know, I treat it like a trip down memory lane, do you know what I mean? I'm not there to bore anybody. Obviously, I don't have like a whole night's worth of hits, but I'm going to play any hit that I had, I'll be playing it. and I'll be playing some songs, you know, from my early albums and stuff. So I promise I'm not going to be doing any jazz trio stuff. It'll all be 80s stuff.
And, mm-hmm.
I just treat it as a bit of fun, you know, and I hope that the people who come treat it as that as well, that it's kind of, it's just to relive some memories and, you know, enjoy it.
And you've got a band with you?
Yeah, we have a band. It's a regular band that I use all the time, yeah, so, you know.
Good guys.
Yeah, we have a bit of fun, like I say. I mean, it's, you know, they're not all spring chickens. They're not kids, because I'd feel stupid going up there with, like, 20-year-olds, do you know what I mean? So they're kind of, they're older guys like me.
Yeah. Experienced musicians.
Yeah, and, you know, and they've done it all before, and they've played with some big acts over the years and all the rest of it, and so I think they can just have a bit of fun as well, really. You know, they do a lot of these 80s things as well, so they might be playing for, like, Paul Young, ABC, you know, me, Bananarama, whoever's on the gig, and they just do it, and, you know, they know what they're doing, and it's, you know, we, what I'm trying to say is that I don't take myself seriously doing this, if you know what I mean. I take the concert seriously, and I make sure that I'm on good form to sing and all the rest of it, but I just don't, it's not a comeback, it's not me trying to, reinvent myself. It's just me saying, look, you know what, folks, I used to sing these songs, and if you remember and I remember them, let's just have a bit of fun, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But Rick, please record another album.
We'll see. You know what, recording albums these days, it's a funny thing. I don't really know why people bother. Nobody sells any records anymore, do you know what I mean? It's kind of, well, listen to me, what an old guy I am, records.
It's for the love of music.
Remember? Yeah, I know, but you know what, and I've said this to friends, actually, and I mean this. I play drums in a band with a producer friend of mine. He plays guitar, and another guy who's an actor, and he does a lot of voiceover work. But all they want to do is play rock music. And so we just do rock covers. We just do, you know, stuff like The Clash, AC/DC, but we play a few modern things like The Killers and stuff and what have you. And we do tiny little gigs. We do them for charity. And we just get together a couple of nights. We learn a bunch of new songs, and we just go and play them for fun. And I have as much fun doing that as I've ever had doing anything in music. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And I think, for me anyway, that's kind of, that just says something. It sort of says that that is very true, that you've got to do it for the love of it, for sure. Like I said before, you know, everyone does it for the money as well. But there's got to be some element of enjoyment in it. And if there isn't, then you just don't want to be doing it. And and like I say, I really enjoy doing these little rock little gigs that I do, playing drums, because that's what my first passion was, playing drums. But I enjoy doing my 80s gigs because once I'm up there, I kind of think, you know what, I don't take myself seriously. I treat it as, it's a bit of fun, let's just enjoy it, you know what I mean? I count myself as lucky that there's any audience who wants to come out and hear me sing them anyway, do you know what I mean? So, well, it's in your blood then, and that's it. You know, it's kind of, I think that's the really sad thing for sports people. I can't imagine what it must be like to retire from sports if you still want to do it.
Mm.
I mean, you know, with music, I mean, you know, pop stars, obviously, it's a little bit age-related, I guess. But, you know, with certain kinds of music, you can go on and, well, the Rolling Stones are doing it, you know what I mean? They just keep going, you know. So, but if you're, Yeah, can you imagine that, being an amazing football player or runner or whatever it is, and you just have to hang your boots up because you're just not able to do it anymore. Do you know what I mean? You've got the talent, but you just don't have that 25% of speed that you need to keep it up at that level. It's like crazy.
Rick, it's been absolutely a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, my
pleasure. And all my best to Lena and your family. And
thank you, and to yours.
I hope I can manage to get to one of the concerts in Denmark.
Yeah, well, if you do, come and say hello.
I will.
If you don't worry about it. I know what it's like. There's a concert every night.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Ja, bye. Og det var så min snak med Rick Ashley, som jeg havde i går aftes. Og du kan have siddet og lyttet intenst. Du kan. Hallo. Du kan.